The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Hey, welcome to a Thursday, and not just any Thursday. Oh my goodness, I have a whole bunch of songs here that I would love to play for you, but I can't because I'd get copyright violated. So I do have a playlist. Or I could sing. I could sing for you. How about legalize it? Don't criticize it. Okay, you don't want to hear me sing. So I'll tell you what. Instead of doing that, how about we listen to President Biden? Because the president made a little announcement today. Hold on, let me try to get this in a workable place. All right, so I could play the video. It goes like this.
As I said when I ran for president, no one should be in jail just for using or possessing marijuana. It's already legal in many states, and criminal records for marijuana possession have led to needless barriers to employment, to housing, and educational opportunities. That and that's true. Before you address the racial disparities around who suffers the consequences. While white and black and brown people use marijuana at similar rates, black and brown people are arrested, prosecuted, and convicted at disproportionately higher rates. So today, I'm taking three steps to end this failed approach.
Yeah?
First, I'm announcing a pardon for all prior federal offenses
wow.
for the simple possession of marijuana. There are thousands of people who are convicted for marijuana possession who may be denied employment, housing, or educational opportunities as a result of that conviction. My pardon will remove this burden on them.
Fuck
second,
yeah.
I'm calling on all governors to do the same for state marijuana possession offenses.
Yeah.
Third, the federal government currently classifies marijuana as a Schedule I substance.
Yeah.
The same as heroin and LSD and more serious than fentanyl. It makes no sense. So I'm asking the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Attorney General to initiate a process to review how marijuana is scheduled under federal law. Even as federal and local regulations of marijuana change, important limitations on trafficking, marketing and underage sales should stay in place. Too many lives have been upended because of our failed approach to marijuana. It's time that we right these wrongs.
Woohoo! You go, Joe! Or should I say, go, Brandon! Well, you know, this was totally unexpected because Joe Biden, he was against legalization. You know, this just shows this is a president who is listening to his constituents and listening to the advisors that he brought on board. Dank Brandon. There you go, Blue America. Dank Brandon. Forget about Dark Brandon. He's now Dank Brandon. I gotta do it. Maybe if I just play it like low underneath, like down here, we can just, you know, just to get the mood going.
Legalize it.
Okay, sorry. Don't criticize it. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I got a whole playlist here that I will post. I'll post a playlist of songs to smoke weed by along with today's show on the website at NicoleSandler.com/10-6-22. You know, I really thought about bringing in a joint or something to celebrate on the air and just, you know, hit on it throughout the show. But you don't want me to do that, really, because I do not speak well when I've imbibed a little bit. It definitely, I mean, I have great ideas and stuff. I just don't verbalize them well. So, anyway, there's a great song that actually I think I tweeted out and I put on Facebook as soon as the news broke today. And it's from Toby Keith, of all people, and no, I am not a Toby Keith fan. I'm not a country music fan. However, it's called Weed with Willie, and it's Toby Keith telling the story of going on the bus and taking a hit off of one of Willie's spleefs. And basically, at the end, it says, "I'll never smoke weed with Willie again." So, but sure he would. You know he would. So, anyway, oh no, MAGA GOP has released their latest anti-Biden campaign. Oh, Reefer Madness. Yeah, the reactions online are quite interesting. I did find a few here from Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren tweets, "For too long, our country's senseless cannabis laws have disproportionately punished black and brown communities. My colleagues and I are urging POTUS to use its executive authority to issue a pardon for all nonviolent federal cannabis offenses." And this was dated, the letter that she then tweeted out was dated November 9th, 2021. So less than a year. Less than a year, right? There's so many more. Hold on. I know I flagged a bunch of them. And of course, now I can't find the messages I flagged. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh, that's a different one. Senator Tom Cotton, just to give you the other side's response. You know, he's a Republican. Tom Cotton said, "In the midst of a crime wave and on the brink of a recession, Joe Biden is giving blanket pardons to drug offenders, many of whom pled down from more serious charges. This is a desperate attempt to distract from failed leadership." Oh, sorry, wrong one. I have the wrong bank of sound effects up here, though I guess that worked. I'm looking for the bullshit. I guess I don't have bullshit on this. On this bank, I can do it for
bullshit.
Here. There you go. Anyway, sorry. Sometimes I Dave Weigel, who writes for the Post and covers right wingers, then retweeted what Tom Cotton said, and with, "If you were wondering how Republicans would respond to a move that was polling well, and many Dems think will help win votes next month." Yeah. So there's that. There were others. There's more. John Fetterman. Oh, gotta love John Fetterman. You know, John Fetterman, the Senate candidate, the Democratic nominee for senator from Pennsylvania, said, "This is a BFD and a massive step toward justice." John Fetterman, a longtime proponent of decriminalizing marijuana, said in reaction to the news that President Biden granted pardons for simple marijuana possession and took steps to decriminalize. But wait, there's more. The second part of it, he said, this is a Fetterman quote again, "I don't want to hear any bullshit from Dr. Oz or any Republican conflating decriminalizing marijuana with seriously harmful crime. As mayor of Braddock, I work to combat serious crime. I know what it looks like. Marijuana just doesn't fit the bill." Yeah, right? Even your mom, didn't care about that kind of bullshit crime. Well, this is so long overdue. So long overdue. Then there's this guy, Max Burns. Now, who is Max Burns? I don't even know. He's the founder of Third Degree Strategies. I guess he's a journalist, a contributor to The Hill and NBC News and The Young Turks. Okay, so he has a thread on Twitter that's pretty good. He said, "After a first year marked by setback and disappointment among Democratic activities and even some senior officials, President Joe Biden is suddenly on pace for one of the most substantive first terms in modern presidential history." Well, that's true. "Not only has Biden salvaged much of his Build Back Better agenda and enjoyed a popular resurgence as Dark Brandon, he's now pushing to the left on marijuana policy in a way even White House officials considered politically impossible 6 months ago. Biden's bold moves on marijuana will likely pay immediate dividends for Democratic candidates up and down the ballot." Please, please, please. Let's see. "Marijuana reform is among the most popular bipartisan issues in America, Now Biden stands alone as its major champion. Let's see. Biden has often held up FDR as his political hero, a president who knew when to take compromise wins and when to push the country forward with unexpected displays of leadership. Now Biden is proving he can do more than learn from political history. He can make it. Ah, and it goes on. I'll read you a few more because there's not much more, but this guy, Max Burns, is spot on. Republicans are now faced with opposing a wide swath of very popular legislation and executive action. Marijuana policy is a hugely effective wedge issue to cleave away red state voters who are most likely to benefit from Biden's huge marijuana reforms. There's a reason support for legalized and decriminalized marijuana is so big in red states. Because a lot of self-styled conservatives like to kick back and get high. And a lot of them have seen their job prospects suffer due to marijuana convictions. Good luck running on the prohibitionist line now, Republicans. Alongside abortion, Biden has just added marijuana policy as another nightmare issue for congressional Republicans. Biden's message to the American people is clear. Do you like what you're seeing? Then go out in November and vote for bigger Democratic majorities. Let's go, Brandon! Yeah, baby! I mean, really, what more do you need?
Come on, man.
Come on, man! All right, see, this is great news. This just came up. I had a whole bunch of other stuff to share with you for this portion of the show before Howie Klein comes on. But this broke maybe 40 minutes ago, and it is great news. Look, I'm not a drinker. I really never drank. And seriously, I mean, David, my husband, is a wine person, right? So when I met him, you know, I told him there are some wines I like, but I'm more, you know, I'm not a drinker. And then he's turned me on to some really good wine. Turns out I love a good Pinot Noir and a good champagne. But alcohol, I don't go there. But I'll tell you something. When I get off the air at night, I take a hit off the vape pen or a joint or the little mini bubbler, little bong thing that I just got. Because it just mellows me out. Again, I'm responsible during the week. I don't indulge during the day because I have work to do. I certainly don't indulge before I go on the air because you would know. Believe me, you would know in a heartbeat. Oh, yeah, she's stoned. I mean, I had to apologize to my kid the other day, who's an adult now, by the way, because she called and it was like dinner time. And I was comfortably numb. And I couldn't put the words together to make a coherent sentence to respond to what she was asking me. So anyway, alcohol is an addictive poison. I agree. And here's the other part of it. Alcohol is I don't know what you call it. Alcohol will get, I would rather be in a room filled with people just stoned on pot than drunk on alcohol. Oh my God. There's no question. If you're in a bar with a bunch of drunks, there's going to be a fight. It's going to get violent. It's going to get ugly. It'll get loud. People will get boisterous. It'll get sloppy. They don't know what they're talking about. But you sit around with some people, you know, smoking pot, and they may say, "Ooh, turn that song up again. Did you hear that drum fill?" Or they'll ponder, you know, the universe and the big questions of the universe. Or, you know, they'll fall asleep. Nobody is going to go out and assault anyone. Nobody is going to get violent, right? Joe, take a hit.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. All right. So there you go. That's good news. That is really, really good news. All right. I have the actual executive order. It's already been released. It's up on the Twitters. And, oh my goodness. Okay, there's other stuff going on. In fact, let me, you know, we'll continue. Look, that's not going away. And hopefully his overture to get cannabis removed from the schedule of narcotics, is really important. So we will stay on that subject. And who said the giggles? Honey Bunny, for you, I like giggling. The giggles are a wonderful side effect of cannabis, but you need the right strain. Some of it is, you know, sleepy. Some of it is really munchy. That I here's my one desire. Please, somebody make a, you know, cultivate a strain that I understand the increase in appetite is great. It's a medical thing for a cancer patient, maybe somebody undergoing chemo who has no appetite and really they need to, you know, eat something. So you need the strains that do stimulate the appetite. But what I like, I don't want it to stimulate the appetite. Can we, you know, tweak that effect of some strains? Yeah. Five drunks will start a fight. Five stone guys will start a band. Linda, you got that right. Then there's Chris who says we drank and smoked. But that's okay, because you know what? The weed takes some of the edge off. Anyway, there's that. There's other news. And in fact, I think a friend, old friend and a friend of the show, my friend Spocko, was going to call in because he had something he wanted to talk about. And actually, I saw news that applied to him. So Spocko, if you call in, now would be a good time. But here's the thing. See, Spocko is somebody who he's worked with media people. He's worked with elected officials and candidates on how to communicate effectively in an interview situation. He also has launched and been successful in campaigns against, you know, hate talk, right wing, crazy radio people. And, you know, he was doing the Stop Beck stuff before Stop Beck stopped Beck. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. But yeah, the guy who now runs as the head of Media Matters had a Twitter account called Stop Beck, and he went after Glenn Beck and really had him, you know, added to Beck's downfall. Let's just say that he really did stop Beck. But Spocko's done that too. He has gotten advertisers to stop advertising on some of these shows that are the worst of the worst. And the reason I bring that up is because he went after somebody in the San Francisco Bay Area where I didn't live. So if Spocko, you calling or what? If he calls in, I will, you know, we'll get the story out of him. But so one of the shows that he went after, I believe, was on the radio station KGO. And there he is. So I can ask him. Hey, Spocko, thanks for calling. You there?
I'm here.
Hey. So I'm just telling the story. Before we get into what you wanted to call about, I was explaining that you have done work, you know, that you work with candidates, and you work with public officials and executives on communications and stuff like that, but that you also, before Media Matters did it, you targeted certain right-wing hate talk personalities and went after their advertisers and said, do you know what these people are saying before they play your commercials, and got some of them to pull advertising. Mm-hmm. And I believe one of those was on KGO, was it not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was actually their sister station, KSFO, that had some of the worst, although I think he was on KGO a couple of times. And I actually was talking to Rick Perlstein about this just the other day, because he's working on a new book.
Of course he is.
And he asked me, he's like, so which was the host that was talked about stomping protesters to death and blowing their brains out? And I said, well, that was Lee Rogers. And so I found the clip and I, you know, played it for him and transcribed it. And it was astonishing just how vicious and violent they were. And then the other host, Melanie Morgan, would organize these events with what she called protest warriors that would attack people who were in the like Code Pink people, and she would set these things up. And I just thought, I said, you know, how much is this like what happened now, only at the Trump level? And so I was describing some of the techniques that I used to help get them to stop. And one of them today was I went to the owners, the parent company, ABC Disney. The company also owned KGO and KSFO.
Right.
And so I said to them, hey, Do you know what your insurance would happen if a protest that you organized and somebody got hurt? And they're like, yeah. So that shut down some of their protest. And did you hear today that KGO is signing off?
Yes. Well, that's why I'm bringing this up. So let me read to you from allaccess.radio and record industry trade website. And the headline is KGO San Francisco drops talk and is stunting. And it says it happened Thursday morning today when Cumulus is the company that bought the ABC Disney Radio Group. So Cumulus, another C company with owning too many radio stations and screwing many of them up. When Cumulus Talk, KGO 810 San Francisco ended their talk format and began stunting with music and promotional clips about money and gambling. A message posted on the KGO website said, "Today we say goodbye to the legendary KGO. Over the last 80 years, KGO has been here for Bay Area listeners, conveying and discussing all the news that has impacted our world and local communities. We thank you for your loyalty, blah, 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 blah. On Monday, 8:10 a.m. begins a new era. We hope you will tune in." And then all the on-air promos are saying things like the biggest gamble in Bay Area radio history, and music about money includes Take the Money and Run by Steve Miller, the Pet Shop Boys, Opportunities, Let's Make Lots of Money, ABBA's The Winner Takes All, and Lady Gaga's Poker Face. And so what I hear they're going to do, Spocko, is they're going to flip to like a sports gambling format.
Whoa.
Yeah. So look, radio, as you know, the industry that I lived in for 35 years or so, is you know, it's hurting. It's hemorrhaging listeners. It's hemorraging money. The old ways they did things don't really work anymore in this day and age of streaming things on demand and podcasting, where you can get the shows you want, when you want, where you want, how you want. And you don't have to worry about it. Oh, this comes on at 3 o'clock and it's on the station in San Francisco. You know, so I think radio is having to reinvent itself. And that's wild. KGO is one of the bigger, you know, a radio station with only three letters, that's a heritage station, right?
I'm from the Midwest where they had WOW.
Oh, yeah.
Which was supposed to be only on ones, you know, west of the Mississippi. Again, a big heritage station. It also had a huge signal, too.
Yeah, that happens. But, you know, a lot of these heritage stations, so Cumulus owned, you know, I worked for the company that preceded Cumulus. In New York, it was still ABC when I worked for them. I worked at WPLJ. But KABC was our sister station. They were just a floor below us. Then I moved to Los Angeles and I worked for KLOS, which was then bought by Disney. And Disney then bought by Cap Cities, ABC, Disney. And then Cumulus came in and swept them all up. And now Cumulus is selling them off piecemeal. WPLJ in New York is now like Way FM, one of those religious radio stations and things. You know, it's just pretty wild. So anyway, that's my industry that's now, I guess, being sold off for parts.
I have a question for you about when you're working in industry. Did you have a 7 second delay?
Yes. Oh, any time. Not on just the straight music stations, but on the talk stations, absolutely. Anywhere you take phone calls, and when I work with Mark and Brian, without a doubt. Oh yeah.
And what would happen if somebody swore or you swore and it got through?
Okay. Well, the way it works is nothing happens unless somebody complains to the FCC. And with the complaint, you also need to provide tape. So, you know, it's more involved than it sounds. But what happened was it was during the early 90s, I think, that this all, after Janet Jackson's breast was exposed, then the controls, they came down with a heavy hand. And that's when you had to be really careful. We couldn't even use, you know, we couldn't play the Who song, Who Are You? Because in the middle it says, "Who the fuck are you?" And it's just, you know, you don't hear it unless you know the lyrics, but had to bleep out or you know, silent out the fuck. The Alanis Morissette song was a big hit then, you ought to know, we had to, you had to be really careful about the lyrics and the songs. And if somebody slipped and said something, or a caller got through, the personality on the air could be liable for a fine of up to like $400,000. But right. whoever wants to lodge the complaint has to really know that they're going after you, and run tape all the time. Because when you file a complaint with the FCC, again, you need the date, the time, the station, the tape, the audio of what happened. And back then, there was nothing, you know, saved. Radio, you would speak it, it would go, and it's gone forever. So anyway, you could be fined, you know, close to $500,000.
And who set up those fines? What was the organization that?
I believe the FCC.
Okay. And they were about, it was obscenity was one, profanity on there, about somebody, a host saying something about, I'm going to, you know, kill somebody, or you know, threats of violence or things like that.
Not as far as I know, nothing spelled out, but I would think that could be, you know, worthy of a complaint. And it's, right.
So the thing that I want to do is to kind of like, you know, move people onto the next thing. And the reason I brought that up about somebody had a consequence if they screwed up based on decisions that the people decided obscenity was wrong. And right. since you couldn't avoid it, we're going to have a fine, or we're going to have some rules and regulations around it. So when the internet started up, it was like, oh, okay. So, what if it's on a private company's website and they say it, you know, and like,
right.
well,
that's different.
They can decide it.
Yeah.
And the thing that I wanted to direct people to was, I liked to talk about people who have done successfully fought current threats of violence on the internet.
Okay.
And with, you know, Elon Musk. And so I want to direct people to the Center for Countering Digital Hate. I did a tweet about it, and he talked about Elon Musk. And here's uh-huh. the thing that I wanted to talk about. We as a people define what is, you know, good for the public or whatever, and companies can too. And he had a thing about Elon Musk. He says he's consistently failed to understand the consequences of his sophomore slogan that Twitter would be better if users had more free speech. And he said, he appears to believe freedom to abuse is a necessary part of free speech. It's not. Harassment boots the people who are calling and sending death threats to people up to the suits, which is Tucker Carlson and
uh-huh.
Matt Walsh.
Uh-huh.
And I think there is a way to do this. And I say, let's look at the people who are already doing it and being effective. Iman Amen and Keffels on there. Organize this and realize that anything that we try, they'll try and use against us, but it means we have to try, because otherwise there are no consequences for their threats of violence. That's how Trump wins. So we as a people can figure out a way to do consequences. We've done it. Look at these two people. I'd like to get these people's experience in front of the big money uh-huh. at these hospitals and say, your people shouldn't have to deal with these death threats, and the people doing it can be caught and
okay.
dealt with.
Well, I'll tell you what, Spocko, because I need to run and get Howie Klein on the phone because it's almost his time. But let's look at something in the next couple of weeks and maybe have you on for a longer segment. We'll go through some of this and what we might be able to do. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And I'm not high right now either.
But you could.
I could be.
You know, and then we could sing. You know, there's this one that I'm not playing again because I don't want to get copyright violated. But why doesn't it want to play? Oh, now great. Now it wants to play a commercial.
No.
Yeah, never mind. Hold on.
Smoke
I was going to.
It's in your eyes.
That, no, not that I was going to play because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. Again, here we go.
Roll another blunt.
Everybody sing. Ooh. Oh, just a minute. Just a little bit of it. Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high.
I was gonna clean my room.
Then I got high.
Yeah.
I was gonna get up and find the broom. But then I got high.
Uh-huh.
My room is still messed up.
And I know why.
Why, man? Yeah.
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. All right. We'll finish the celebration a little later. Spocko. Thanks. Email me or text me or message me, and we'll figure it out. We'll
set up. Have a good high day.
I will. You too. All right. Bye. And do it legally. Yeah, man. Okay. Now it's time for Howie Klein, who I don't think gets high anymore. Well, like he told us, unless he's with Neil Young, right? That's if he's with Neil and Neil lights one up, he'll smoke it. All right. So today, somebody said it's going to be a dabbing Dirty Debbie. All right. Who's got the dabs going? All right, let's get Howie, huh?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Yo, Howie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Good. Did you see what Joe Biden did today?
Yes, I did. That was shocking.
That was shocking, right? Good news. And shocking.
Yeah, I mean, and not something that he's been, beaten up over and pushed constantly.
No, not at all. Well, but he has been. I mean, Elizabeth Warren tweeted out a letter that she and a few other senators sent him last November, so a year ago, imploring him to do basically what he did today. So,
yeah,
you know.
But it hasn't been like a thing like, you know, where he's you know, being hit up on it every day, like with some of the other things that he grudgingly did. He seemed to feel good. I mean, I'm guessing that he felt good about doing this.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure he's got to, because you know he's getting all the thanks and the accolades now. People are going, "Wow! Dank Brandon." I love it. So this has been a weird week. So did you we've talked about my congressman before. Tell me if I'm wrong to be so pissed off. Ted Deutch.
No, off. You're rightfully angry at him.
I am so angry. So this guy was basically handed this seat when his predecessor left to go run some Jewish organization. I forget the name of it, but Robert Wexler left his seat and went on to some United Jewish Appeal or something like that. And now Ted Deutch, I guess he's been there about 8 years, which is fine. And we've talked about him. He's been okay. He hasn't been horrible. He hasn't been great. He's been kind of a middle of the road, get along, go along guy.
I think of people like him as a waste of a seat.
Yeah.
It's a very, very blue district. Almost any kind of Democrat could win, and it would be nice to have, you know, more someone who's sort of pushing on the boundaries a little bit to get things moving in the right direction. He just sits there. I don't think he's ever done anything.
Right. No, nothing. I mean, he stepped up on gun reform after Parkland because that's his district.
yeah.
That was his big issue. Well, duh. Of course it's going to be. So he had to do things. He had to be pushed into. He finally supported Medicare for All after, you know, long after he should have done it. And my friend Mitch, who was a real progressive activist in this area, he lobbied Ted for years to do the right thing, get on board. And yet Mitch dies of cancer. Well, then Ted gets on, you know, he's like, so anyway, the thing that I'm pissed off at him about is he let us know a few months ago he's not running for re-election. He's going to retire. He's going to go run this organization. All well and good. Except he sort of handpicked his successor, who's the worst of the candidates that ran. We can talk about that in a minute. But then just the other day, he announced oh, tomorrow's going to be my last day. I'm resigning early. What? When there's still important legislation that really needs to pass at the end of the term, and we still have 3 months. He's retiring early, and there's a margin of maybe one vote in the House? That's not okay.
No, it's not. I hope you've let him know.
Oh, you better believe I've let him know. I mean, I haven't spoken to him personally, but I've slammed his Twitter account. I've emailed him. I've called his office. I have posted online, and I've railed against him on the air. I'm pissed.
Yeah, I mean, the nerve of someone to do something like that, it's just so such a slap in the face for the people who live in that district.
Yeah. It's just... And then he took a victory lap. He sent out this email. Oh, it's been my honor to serve you and do. And I'm like, you're leaving 3 months early. The work's not done yet. How dare you? Oh, just pisses me off. And then his handpicked protege, who
did he give the excuse of why he was?
He gave no excuse. Just like, there's only 3 months left. I'm gonna bail now and, you know, get to work on my new job. Because I don't give a shit about you. It's about me. Right? It's just horrible. So anyway, the guy who he picked, well, I'm sure he didn't pick it, but gave his blessing to Jared Moskowitz, who is the Democratic nominee from this district, who will win because this is a blue district. I mean, this is, you know, this district is blue. That's all. And so here from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, listen to this. Jared Moskowitz. I guess it's something having to do with the name Jared. Quote, I don't think we needed 87,000 more IRS agents, Florida 23 Democrat Jared Moskowitz says. I think those people are going to be turned on the middle class. So that's the worst thing President Biden's done. Hey, Jared, I got a little song for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Every now and then, I just have to whip that out.
That's great.
So
yeah, and when did he read from the Republican talking points memo?
I don't know. I just saw that today. Somebody sent me that a tweet from Anthony Mann, who is the, you know, the Broward County politics guy at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Here it said, Jared Moskowitz's assertion about 87,000 more IRS, da da da, including. Echoes comments from Republicans, including Marco Rubio, Rick Scott, GOP leader, and from the Heritage Foundation. Gee, thanks, Anthony Mann. But this is just today, 4 hours ago, this was tweeted out.
Why don't you invite him on the show?
Jared Moskowitz, I did. Here's the thing, you know, because it's my district. So there were six candidates on the ballot. I reached out. I invited all six of them on so I could make an informed choice. Other five all responded to me immediately. Within 2 weeks, all five came on. During that whole time, I kept sending letters, emails, tweets to everybody I knew connected with the campaign, to the person who was the campaign manager, to Jared Moskowitz on Twitter. Didn't get a response to one of them. Not even a response. Not even a we're so busy, thanks, but no thanks. They just ignored me. And that, I'm sorry. Not that I'm so great shakes or anything, but you know what? I did the morning show of the only progressive talk station in South Florida. It was years ago, but still, this is all we have to work with down here. It's not like I'm some, you know, Oki from Wiskokie who has no tie into the community. I live in the district. I broadcast from here. People know me. They didn't even dignify my outreach with a response.
I mean, this sounds just awful. It sounds like we're going to have a Republican with a D next to his name.
That's what it sounds like. Oh, and by the way, he worked for death sentence. He worked for him. in I don't even know what, I think in COVID, but the whole COVID response of this this administration sucked. So whatever Jared Moskowitz did was probably just right in line with them. I'm disgusted that he's going to be the congressman for this district.
Yep. And was there, in the primary, was there somebody who came close? Or was it all just...
Yeah, in second place was the person I voted for, a guy named, excuse me, Ben Sorensen, who was the vice mayor of Fort Lauderdale. And he was good. He was good. But the thing is that Jared Moskowitz was always going to be next in line for this seat, because that's how the Democrats do things. You know, I sent you...
I remember that AIPAC and DMFI was shoving money into his campaign.
Yeah, well, of course they were. Yeah, just put a bat... You know, I'm not... happy about this one. Obviously, I don't even know who the Republican is in the race. This no Republican can win here. This is one of the bluest districts in Florida. And so it's a blue district. And they've decided who's going to be next. And it's going to be, you know, another Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's what you have here. But, you know, I sent you an email earlier today, Howie, telling you about the guest who I had on yesterday. And you need to read this book, or I need to introduce you to this guy, Ed Bermilla, because he got it. He gets it. He's a political scientist. He has a PhD in political science, and he taught it, teaches American politics and rights, and, you know, so he's kind of one of us. And he just everything he said was spot on. I could read you a part that he has about Chuck Schumer.
Let's hear it.
Okay. So, and it's the way he writes too, that he's just so good. Let me see if I can find this passage, because he really made me laugh out loud. I know it's, you know, LOL is a thing, but here, damn it. I should have flagged it. I know it's here somewhere. I think it was right before, I'm going to have to find this. Damn it. He talked about who Chuck Schumer thinks, who he gears everything. Here it is. I got it. Okay. All right. So it started with, he was talking about the Democrats' response to the very first of Donald Trump's speeches to a joint session of Congress. You know, the first one is not State of the Union. And do you remember the Democrats put up Steve Beshear, who was the governor of Kentucky. And they had him do this whole bipartisan thing. So I must have put that out of my mind. So he rails on that whole situation. And then he says, and this is what the Democratic powers that be and still are concocted. This was what they chose to do with their first big symbolic chance to show America that that they weren't the sad sack team in Air Bud that just lost a basketball game to a fucking dog. This was the way they thought they could inspire their emotionally shattered base and win over a country full of people grappling with the prospect of 4 years of President Father Coughlin. Hey, America, they could have said, we got the message in November and we're ready to fight. Even if it was a lie, they didn't even try to sound a note of energy and enthusiasm. They went with David Lynch presents bipartisanship at the Cracker Barrel. Which I just thought was just brilliant.
And this course, guy is fantastic.
I told you, I'm reading this book and just laughing. But the thing I didn't do is flag the passages that I wanted to share. And I can't find this Mitch McConnell. I'll find it, because I found it again. And like an idiot, I didn't turn the page down. Shit. It talks about, and we talked about it, I asked him about it, how Mitch McConnell has devised the couple. It's a white middle-class couple who live in Massapequa, New York. And, you know, they're who he always envisions when he's working on legislation or anything. This is who he's talking to. Really? Rather than pick anything, but an older white couple in Massapequa, Long Island?
And we're talking, you said McConnell, but you meant Schumer.
I meant Schumer. Damn. I can't find it. I will find it and I'll share it. But yeah, I mean, this his writing is just spot on. I could probably pick. Here, let me just give you another paragraph. Under the section of where we are and how did we get, where are we and how did we get here? It says, this book has two goals. One is to explain the evolution of the Democratic Party from the economic populism of the New Deal era to the non-ideological lifestyle branding for better off liberals it is today. This is the how and why of the way the party is at present. The second goal is to identify and draw out the specific things Democrats get wrong, the mistakes they make over and over. Everyone consents that something is wrong, and countless critics have already argued that the Democrats are too liberal or not liberal enough or whatever. I linger instead on the broader, more fundamental question, why does seeing these people in action always feel like watching a movie we've seen before? Why is it so predictable? Not only that they'll underwhelm and disappoint, but the specific ways in which they'll do it. I mean, and then he gives examples. It really, I mean, I know I'm spending too much time on it, but it really is.
Oh, you're not.
It is good.
And I hope that you'll introduce us by email.
You know what? I don't have. I will message him on Twitter and get his email so I can introduce you, because you guys need to talk. His messaging is spot on, and you need to read this book. It's just that good.
I know. I'm going to.
Yeah, that's why I sent you the email today. It's like, oh, as I'm reading it, and I'm you know, I keep stopping David in mid conversation or whatever he was doing during dinner the other night to say, oh my God, listen to this. And it kept sharing paragraph after paragraph because I was alternatively laughing and like shaking my head. It's like, I can't believe this. He's got here. Oh, you'll love this. Okay, talking about Trump. Instead, faced with the rise of a store brand dictator, the perfect synthesis of Kim Jong-il and Don Rickles, they decided on a message that vacillated between fear and appeasement. And to deliver it, this was the run-up to the response to Trump's first thing. They chose a septuagenarian retired governor from a state Trump won in a landslide, and they sat him in the dark, surrounded by a consultant's idea of what regular folk are like, gleaned from hillbilly elegy in 4 weeks of campaigning in Iowa, saying, I'm a Republican, and describing his audience hostages as Democrats and Republicans within the first 5 seconds, approximately the time it took the few viewers of the grotesque spectacle to ask, am I dead or do I simply wish I were? So he writes just beautifully because it's good. In the meantime, there's other stuff going on. You have a great piece up at downwithtyranny.com. Good for America.
Yes, it was kind of like my frustration with the media, that all they're doing is covering Herschel Walker. Everyone is covering Herschel Walker. Every 5 minutes, another Herschel Walker story comes out, literally. And no one has mentioned anything about this amazing visionary op-ed that Ro Khanna did yesterday in the Boston Globe. I mean,
right.
It just came
and
out.
That's interesting.
And even MSNBC.
That he wrote it in the Boston Globe. Ro Khanna is a San Jose area, you know, a Silicon Valley Democrat. But the headline is America Needs a New Economic Patriotism Plan. It would consist of a comprehensive set of policy actions designed to restore American manufacturing and technology leadership and a call to respect workers who will help our country achieve that goal. Common sense. I mean, really, what he's saying in here, and I'll link to it on the blog today. It was great, and I don't know if you saw. It might have been The Hill, so I don't put much credence in it, but they had an article along the lines of who some of these six Democrats could be in line to, you know, take the baton basically from Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And I'm like, okay, so who are they deeming the great progressive leaders coming up? Ro Khanna was one, yeah. Right? I didn't save the article.
Probably Jeff Merkley was another one.
He was not. He was not.
Oh, my God.
AOC, AOC was.
Okay.
I got to see if I can find it, if it's at The Hill, because yeah, I read so much stuff in the morning. And, you know, some things I flag and I take, and then others I forget to hold on to. And then later on in the day, I'm going, wait a minute, who wrote that thing about who's poised to take over as the progressive leaders? Pramila Jayapal was not there. Gavin Newsom was.
Oh, my God. There's right? Mr. Progressive, if I ever saw one.
God, who are some of the others? It was surprising that AOC and Ro Khanna were really the only two I agreed with.
Right.
Yeah. So
odd that they would leave out Pramila. That is strange. Oh, right. I know why. She can't run for president because she was not born in the
country. Not born here. I guess that makes sense. I mean,
that's the law. That's in the Constitution. So, on the other hand, Ro Khanna was born in Cleveland.
Right. Ro Khanna was born. Yeah. So he can run for president. He's
absolutely. And, right. And you know, he is definitely thinking about it, not for 2020. He told me that he's not going to run in 2024. He maybe changed his mind. I don't know, but he was pretty adamant that he's not going to do it. He said he's supporting Biden, and I sort of pushed him about Biden maybe not running. And then he said, if Biden doesn't run, you know, I'll support Bernie. Mm-hmm. And he named a few other obvious people who he could, like Elizabeth Warren. But he said he doesn't plan to run.
Huh. Okay. Well, good. You know what? It's hard for anybody to run from the House. There have not been, and I'm no historian, but there have not been a lot of presidents who ran as a member of the House and went right into the presidency. More governors do and some senators, but it doesn't happen often with House members.
That's right. But I think he thinks he's not ready yet. I think he wants to do a lot more of things like he did with that that op-ed and get better known. I mean, you mentioned he's from the San Jose area, and he's known in the Bay Area.
Right.
But, you know, now more people will know him in the Boston area,
right,
which is, for a Democrat, that's essential.
Hey, Howie, I have another clip I need to play for you. And this one, I don't know if you've heard about it or not. Do you know who Al Cardenas is?
Oh, very much so.
Okay, so Al Cardenas, former head of the Republican Party of Florida. He's the man that Anna Navarro married. He is a Republican. Well, listen to this. As Al Cardenas announces he's endorsing Annette Tedeo for Congress.
Yes, I wrote about that. Oh, it's not out yet, but I wrote about it.
Okay, here's the audio.
Democrat for Congress.
First time in 40 years he's endorsing a Democrat for Congress, he said.
And I'm doing it in many of her roles. I know how she thinks. I know that she puts her country and her state above herself. And to me, that's now a precondition to supporting anyone running for office. Mm-hmm. Is your country more important than your particular career, political career? And I know in South Florida and elsewhere about how to behave. I think a lot of the rhetoric in our Hispanic community, South Florida, is way beyond the pale.
Yeah, well, that's, that's an understatement. But so that was nice to hear. That was,
yes. I have a post up that just went up before we went on the air about, Gail Collins had a story about how some Republicans are insane, and she just went right to the obvious ones of, you know, like Herschel Walker and the clown in Don Bolduc in New Hampshire,
right,
and Blake Masters in Arizona. But she didn't go beyond that. And, you know, there were obviously lots of insane governor races. And then I went to some of the House races. And one of the ones that I used, in fact, was Florida 27. And Annette told me this morning, she mentioned, she didn't use Cardenas' name, but she said the former head of the Republican Party endorsed me.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go. That's it. So that's a big deal. The Miami, you know, and also there's a radio station down here, the Spanish language radio wars. I got to get into that again, because there was a station, Waxy, used to be an oldies AM station, and then they went sports some years ago. Well, they're changing format to conservative Spanish talk.
Mm.
Yeah, just what we need, right? So I don't know if you heard the news. KGO is gone. They're killing off the talk format at KGO in San Francisco. And
wow, I used to be on there all the time.
Yeah, well, it's a legendary heritage
Ron
station.
Owens, he come on there constantly.
Right, Ron Owens, right. He was their like flagship personality. Today they are stunting, and they're playing songs about, you know, like money. And here, on-air promos are saying, the biggest gamble in Bay Area radio history. I'm trying to do my announcer voice. Music about money. Two, Take the Money and Run by Steve Miller, Pet Shop Boys, Opportunities, Let's Make Lots of Money, ABBA's The Winner Takes All, and Lady Gaga's Poker Face. And the rumor is that they're going to flip it to some sort of like a sports gambling format. They got to try something because radio is not working as it used to. I mean, if you want good talk radio, you can get a podcast, you can get whatever show you want when you want it. And over-the-air radio, I think, is hurting. So they're obviously trying something different.
You know, they're gigantic. I mean, during the day, it's just a Bay Area station. But at night, they cover half the United States.
Right, because AM radio, the way it operates is there's a skip. And at night, so the signal goes up and it bounces, the AM waves bounces off the atmosphere and it comes back down. That's where the name Clear Channel came from. Because certain radio stations like WABC in New York was a Clear Channel station so that at night with the skip, you could pick up WABC all over the country. And KGO was one of those as well.
Yep. And I would experience that because I used, like I said, I used to go on there very frequently. And, you know, people I hadn't had any communication with for 10 years, and they were in Omaha, and they'd hear me and get in touch.
Yeah, but and that's why. And it was fun at night. You know, we used to try to see what radio stations we could pull in those days. Now you just flip on their stream. It's a different world. So, Howie, one other thing I want to hit on before we go is some 12 years ago, maybe now, or 10 years ago, I was out in L.A. I had my daughter Allison with me. We went out for dinner, and we went to the Bazaar, which was Jose Andres's restaurant in Los Angeles. I don't think it's there anymore. There's one in Miami Beach that is going to be...
Wasn't I with you?
With you, yes. You took us there. We went with you. And it's the only time I've ever been to one of his restaurants, and I bring it up because he is... he deserves a medal. He deserves a Nobel Prize. He is, I think, one of the best human beings on the planet, and he's amazing with food.
And he just opened two new restaurants in Los Angeles and is reopening the Bazaar, although not in the same place. All of this stuff is downtown.
Wow. Oh, downtown. Downtown is the hot spot now in L.A. Downtown was nothing when I lived there. It's like, oh, you didn't go to downtown. That's where like the winos and the homeless people were.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now it's quite turned around. It's a cultural center, lots of good restaurants as well. People go down, you know, magnet restaurants that are so good that people come from all over the city to go there.
Wow. Yeah. Well, now you also have Subways, which weren't there when I lived there. I feel like I lived there, well, a lifetime ago, a generation ago for sure. But Jose Andres is, you know, taking care of business, feeding hundreds of thousands of people in Southwest Florida who still have no services coming their way. But he's on site with his World Central Kitchen feeding them. And, well, you know, it's rare that you get somebody who owns, is the chef at the best restaurants, some of the best in the world, and yet he does this work too. So I just, you know, you turned me on to him. And Allison and
I was aware of him. There was a restaurant in Spain in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it wasn't like it was in Madrid or Barcelona. It was literally nowhere. It was very hard to get to. And it won every year best restaurant of the year, every single year. And he was the chef there. And I used to, you know, make any kind of excuse I could make to go there. And I ate there often. And then one year, suddenly, it was the second best restaurant in the world, and some new restaurant in Copenhagen opened up, and they said that was the best one. And the owner, it wasn't Jose, he had someone that he reported to. The owner closed it down immediately.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. And then that's when he came to the United States and started opening restaurants here.
Oh, interesting. Well, the thing is, what you know, when you said, here's the restaurant we're going to go to, and you said it's molecular gastronomy. Have you heard of it? And I'm like, no. but is that, I mean, that's what he does. He uses, I guess, chemistry to make foods look and taste different than what they do, but it's all amazing.
Yeah, he's a different. You know, one of the things I like about his food presentation is that whatever he serves, you can't get it anywhere else. It's not like, you know, a hamburger where you can get it anywhere and one guy makes it better than the other. That's not what he's doing. He's making unique dishes that that you, if you want them, you go to his restaurant to have them.
Right.
You can't make them at home either.
Right. Now, Allison, we still talk about that place because she was maybe 9 or 10. At the time. So, right. So that had to be 13 years ago. She's 23 now. So, but she still talks about her. She was wandering around because it was a bazaar. It was a restaurant, but it had all this funky stuff. In every sense, it delighted you. It was a great place. So, yeah, I'm so impressed with him. Every time I hear him speak, I'm even more impressed. And I always remember that you're the one who introduced me to his food. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. I had other stuff, but I wasted a lot of time on it. It wasn't wasted time. It's important time. The book, Chaotic Neutral. Read it. And I will work on getting an email address for Ed, and I'll connect us all, Howie.
Thank you.
All right.
Much appreciated. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Howie. Bye. All right.
And
you guys, we're done. That's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, Greg Palast will be here. Old friend of the show. Greg Palast has a new movie coming out. It's called Vigilante, and it is about the what's happening in Georgia. It's all about, you know, voting rights and our votes being taken away and all that. Let me play for you. They call it a PSA because it is kind of a PSA, but it's also a trailer. Why don't I have that screen? Oh. No? Why is that not showing? Ah, here it is. Okay. Now I can show it to you. Sometimes things don't work the way they're supposed to immediately. But I can show you this in just a moment. Sorry. I'm playing director here, getting the video ready. Okay. So here is the trailer or the PSA for Greg Palast's new film, Vigilante. Whoops. Here we go.
Nicole Brown.
Oops, it would help if I started at the beginning.
Georgians, don't let a bunch of vigilantes take away your right to vote. Governor Brian Kemp signed a law that allows any Georgian to challenge any other citizen's right to vote. Under this vigilante voter law, this man challenged 4,000 voters, and this woman challenged 32,000. Are you on a vigilante hit list? Go to Save My Vote and see if you've been challenged or your name purged from the rolls. You'll find information to help you restore your vote. This is Yvette Nicole Brown, and I'm asking you to go to Save My Vote and get the facts. Watch the film, Vigilante, Georgia's Vote, Suppression Hitman.
Vigilante, Georgia's Vote, Suppression Hitman. All right, so tomorrow, Greg Palast on the show. Go to SaveMyVote2022.org for more info. And that does it for us today. I will leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go smoke them if you got them. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It appears that the United States has successfully exported one of the things that was a uniquely American phenomenon until now. Police in Thailand say that at least 34 people, 22 of them children as young as 2 years old, plus two teachers and a police officer, were killed Thursday in a mass shooting at a child care center. The gunman was identified by authorities as a former police officer who was fired after he was arrested with methamphetamine on him. After the shooting, he reportedly fled to his home, killed his wife and children before turning the gun on himself. Well, another day, another bombshell story about Herschel Walker. The Republican Senate nominee in Georgia told Fox Not News on Wednesday that he doesn't know the identity of the woman who told the Daily Beast that he not only urged her to get an abortion in 2009, but then reimbursed her for the procedure. Walker, who allegedly supports abortion bans with no exceptions, has called the allegation a lie meant to hurt his chances of beating the Democratic incumbent, Senator Raphael Warnock, in a tight race. But Walker does indeed know the woman. The Daily Beast reported later because, quote, she's the mother of one of his children, born years after the abortion. The woman said she wants her name withheld to protect the privacy and safety of her family, but Walker's denial made it necessary to provide more information. Just a reminder, the final day to vote is 33 days away. OPEC announced Wednesday that it would slash oil production by 2 million barrels a day to boost those sinking crude prices. The alliance between OPEC and other producers led by Russia said the move was necessary because of the uncertainty that surrounds the global economic and oil market outlooks. Yeah. The Biden administration called the decision short-sighted, saying it would have the most negative impact on lower and middle-income countries that are already reeling from elevated energy prices. Oil surged as high as $128 a barrel after Russia invaded Ukraine, but they've fallen as the demand was reduced. Capital Economics predicted global oil prices will rise from around $93 a barrel up to, again, $100. Well, more bad news for Donald Trump from the appeals court. Yep, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday agreed with the Justice Department's bid to expedite its request to shut down that external review process for the 11,000 or so documents seized by the FBI from Mar-a-Lago. Though the timeline ordered by the judge wasn't as fast as the Justice Department wanted, it's a lot faster than Trump's team wanted. So Trump's lawyers must comply by November 10th and the briefing completed by November 17th with no extensions allowed. So there's that. Well, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis seemed to be on his best behavior on Wednesday when President Joe Biden visited southwestern Florida, the site of the massive damage from Hurricane Ian. But there's a lot to the story. You know, DeSantis, who has joined in the Let's Go brand and insult for a year, is asking the president for federal money to manage the recovery from Hurricane Ian. DeSantis welcomed Biden to Florida and thanked him for approving an emergency declaration for the storm before it even hit. Of course, Biden also had praise for DeSantis, saying he's done a good job, and the two men worked together. We'll see how long the niceties last. To our friends out in Arizona, I don't often tell you to listen to Liz Cheney, but now I'll make an exception. Speaking at an event on Wednesday, Liz Cheney said that the election-denying Republican candidates for Arizona governor and secretary of state pose a huge risk for democracy because both say they will refuse to certify the election if they don't like its outcome. So Cheney encouraged those who care about democracy to, quote, not give people power who have told us that they will not honor elections. You go, girl. And this is troubling. A new Washington Post analysis of Republican candidates up for election next month for the House, Senate, and statewide offices shows that a majority of Republican nominees actually deny the 2020 election results. There are 299 of them, and most are likely to win. All the more reason that the rest of us need to get out and vote. Vote like our lives depend on it, because they do. Well, a federal appeals court on Wednesday ruled that the Obama-era Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, is illegal. The three-judge panel of the conservative U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals sent the case back to a lower court to consider revisions that the Biden administration made in August to preserve the program that provides deportation protection and work authorization for hundreds of thousands of immigrants known as Dreamers who were brought to the U.S. as children. The Biden changes are set to take effect on October 31st, but this decision by the appellate panel affirming a 2021 lower court ruling leaves the program in place for those already enrolled. It also permits beneficiaries to renew their status, but leaves others in limbo yet again. And finally, Iranian schoolgirls are removing their hijabs, shouting death to the dictator and raising their middle fingers at the country's leaders. At least 154 people, including children, have been killed in this latest wave of protests, which were triggered by the death of a 22-year-old named Mahsa Amini. She was arrested by Iran's so-called morality police for allegedly violating rules about attire. Her hijab was too loose, and then she later died in police custody. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.